Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to the Saturday edition of Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. So John Bercow is standing down as Commons Speaker after 10 years in the job. But what will his legacy be? And what does the future hold for his successor? I'm joined by BBC Parliament's Mark Darcy and the John Bercow biographer Bobby Friedman to discuss. So Mark, you're a very close watcher of Parliament as part of your job. What do you think John Bercow's legacy is going to be as he leaves the Speaker's chair?
Well, there are two sides to it. On the plus side of the balance sheet, he speeded up question times, more MPs get in, he's allowed more urgent questions, more emergency debates, which means that Parliament is kind of in the news agenda in a way that sometimes before him it hadn't been. You could have great events unfolding in the country outside, and in SW1 it was the committee stage of some incredibly tedious bill and everyone was droning away on that. Now, you know, if there is a great event going on, the chances are you will see a minister at the dispatch box giving the government's view and the opposition and backbench MPs weighing in as part of any given news report on any given great event. And that's meant that Parliament has had a chance to kind of rub its relevance into the news agenda much more than it did before. So he's changed Parliament a lot in that way. The downside has been, I think, that people now believe that the objectivity of the chair is in question and needs to be restored, that he's had a tendency to get dragged into too many personal arguments with MPs, even on his last day when he had spent hours accepting the plaudits of MPs. He then got into a huge row with one of his biggest critics, Conservative Andrew Bridgen, and it was actually rather an ugly 10 minutes of them exchanging barbs before things got back on track. And that's the kind of thing that he doesn't have to do but seems to get sucked inexorably into. And it's been one of his biggest vices, I think, is a feeling that he gets sucked into these rows when he really doesn't need to. I mean, if you go back a little way, there was an astounding red-faced finger-jabbing row with Patrick McLaughlin when he was the chief whip in the coalition years, which was just an astonishing sight to see. And those kind of things are part of the downside of John Bercow's legacy. And I think that's one reason why when the Speaker election comes up, people will be looking for someone who is almost a non-Bercow in that sense, whatever their view of the procedural changes he's made. And of course, the other big thing is that he has clearly stretched the rules to facilitate a majority in the House to do things on Brexit that the government really, really doesn't like. And that, I think, is what makes him different from almost all previous speakers. He's a historically significant speaker. He has altered the course of events.
And on that, Bobby, do you think history will remember John Bercow kindly?
Well, I don't think it will, really. I think I absolutely agree with Mark that he has done much for backbenchers and for restoring the place of Parliament within our politics, and that is positive. But he has changed the perception of the Speaker, and I think that will be a negative, because ultimately you don't really want to be thinking about the Speaker very much. The Speaker is meant to just be there as a neutral person trying to facilitate debate between politicians whose job it is to have opinions and debate those between them and then ultimately make law. It's not really for the Speaker to do that, and people shouldn't really be exercised one way or another by the Speaker. They might think the Speaker's a bit of a national treasure, but that should be about as far as it goes. So I think that has changed it. You do also have to bear in mind the bullying allegations. Of course, he denies them, that were made against him. But these were serious allegations by a number of people who MPs know very well, and I know a number of MPs believe them. Of course, John Bercow says that they're untrue. So it remains to be seen what the truth is behind them. But ultimately, that is part of his legacy. And I think the fact that you see in the speakership election that we've got coming up, that really, apart from Harriet Harman, all of the candidates are making clear that they're going to change the way in which things are done. I think that says something about the legacy. And it was interesting, in the debate ahead of the general election bill, when Lindsay Hoyle, the Deputy Speaker, was in the chair, and there were the various amendments flying around, and because Lindsay Hoyle was making the decision, it was perfectly obvious what amendments were not going to be selected because they were outside of the scope of the bill, which is the test. And it was like reverting to 10 years ago, when you just knew that if something was in the rules, then it would be allowed. And if it wasn't in the rules, then it wouldn't be allowed. So I think that will be something that does change. So there will be parts of Berko's legacy that will remain. He took on an ambassadorial role as well. So he went around the country speaking on behalf of the Commons. I think that will remain. I think the power for backbenchers will remain. But the other points, no, I think deliberately those will be jettisoned.
And Mark, on that, what changes do you think John Bercow has brought in during his tenure as Speaker that are going to be lasting? In the tributes yesterday, aside from Andrew Bridgen's very specific, tribute's the wrong word, message, we heard about, you know, the idea that he has granted many more urgent questions, that there has been a general sense that he has given backbenchers perhaps more of a voice than would have previously. Do you think any of these changes look likely to be the status quo for the foreseeable?
I think so. I think it's very difficult now for the Commons to, as it were, default back to factory settings as they were sometime in 2007. And I think there will be an expectation that there will be a lot of urgent questions from MPs. There will be an expectation that they can get emergency debates more frequently. They almost never happened under John Bercow's now distantly remembered predecessor, Michael Martin, for example. So those avenues, I think, will have to remain open simply because the MPs out there expect that. But at the same time, it's noticeable no one in the Speaker election that will take place on Monday is running as the continuity Bercow candidate. So I think there might be a scaling back of some of it. Maybe you won't be getting three urgent questions and two statements a day, as you sometimes had, crowding out the business that was due to happen later on. I think those kind of things may calm down a little. But at the same time, MPs now feel they've got a bit more leverage than they've ever had. And while part of that goes with it being a hung parliament, a lot of it is just about what their expectations are, and those expectations are not going to go away.
And when we look to some of the low points, perhaps, in John Bercow's time as Speaker, the one that stands out to me, at least, was the bullying scandal, where there was a report suggesting that if you looked at the various institutions and the people in charge of sections of Parliament, they would have to leave, there to be wholesale change, and John Bercow was implicated in that. Yet you saw lots of MPs standing by him, and Margaret Beckett, I think, put it probably the most frank when she suggested that, you know, some things trump bad behaviour, that being that John Bercow was viewed as being more favourable to Labour MPs' views of Brexit than many Conservatives. Do you think that that was perhaps his lowest point, or what do you think were the trickiest parts of John Bercow's career?
Yes, I mean, I certainly think that was his lowest point. He's been incredibly lucky he was firstly lucky to get the speakership in the first place. Of course, he got it on the back of the expenses scandal when he had flipped his own second home. So he got away with it because he replied to the Telegraph quite late in the day. So the story was put, I think, on page 5. So people barely read about it. He was very lucky with the bullying scandal, which I think should have done for him and would in most circumstances have meant that he'd have had to resign. But Brexit crowded that out. And I think it's been a real shame, really, and a bit of a disgrace, frankly, that MPs have been happy to overlook that because of Brexit. And I think there are certain issues where it does need to be looked at on its merits, regardless of what else is going on politically. So, yes, I mean, that obviously will be the low point for me. As I say, I know he denies it, but what is clear is that, and we've all seen it, anyone who watches John Bercow a lot or sees how he is in Parliament, he does have this Jekyll and Hyde personality, so he can be incredibly charming. But if he doesn't like someone or if he's annoyed by something, the switch can flip and then he really can be very nasty. And I think part of that is also how he's been talking to MPs in the Commons, whereas 10 years ago, student union debating society style put downs were perhaps seen as a bit more fun. But now in this era, we're getting very worried about how MPs are spoken to and the abuse they get. I've been very uncomfortable seeing some of his interventions, which I think border on the nasty. So yeah, that will be a low point. I mean, I think the other low point is, as Mark was mentioning before, the way in which he's been very changeable in his rulings, really going for a political stance, and obviously it's predominantly over Brexit, and making his rulings in a way that will help specifically the side that he supports. And I think that is a low point because you want the speaker to be impartial, and you want them to kind of blend into the background and just do their job in a way that a High Court judge does. And I don't think he did do that.
I think you've got to be a little bit careful about that, because what you've got to bear in mind is that parliamentary procedure is not just a set of rules of the game like, you know, the laws of cricket, where you've got, you know, as if the speaker was sort of arbitrarily repealing the LBW law or something like that. The idea of parliamentary procedure is to facilitate a majority of the House to get ideas in front of it and allow debate and allow a majority to get its way. And if all that stood between the government's policy and getting Brexit through, or whatever it was, getting its bills through, was a set of rules that arbitrarily blocked that majority, that would be slightly bizarre. So a speaker has a chance to interpret the rules in novel ways, and they do from time to time. It's not completely unique. I mean, John Bercow's relationship with the clerks, the kind of, you know, Bronze Age priest class of Parliament, if you like, has been fairly frosty on occasion. But even some of his most vehement critics felt that actually he did the right thing with some of the procedural innovations he introduced on various Brexit-related topics, because it facilitated a majority in the Commons to get something it wanted to do done.
So I do agree with that, Mark, but I think where the issue comes is the lack of consistency with it. And obviously, for example, when Dominic Grieve wanted to and was allowed to amend a government procedural motion, John Bercow wouldn't publish his clerk's advice. And But I could see the logic of that. You could see why you'd allow that. But
speakers don't normally publish the advice that's given to them.
But what he did do was to say, come out and say, well, precedent is there to be ignored. But then equally, in other cases, for example, on Meaningful Vote 3, and then again on Meaningful Vote 4 or 5, whatever you call it, we lose count, he then said, well, I must stick by precedent. And so I think it's that lack of consistency. And I agree with you. Obviously, you want speakers to be able to innovate in the right way, but you want to feel that they're doing it for neutral motives. And I think that was what perhaps we were missing.
Now, let's look to the future and John Bercow's successor, because we have the speaker elections taking place on Monday. Many candidates. I suppose just in the sense of this being a podcast that we don't expect to be too long, let's just look at the favourites. We have Lindsay Hoyle, current deputy speaker. Harriet Harman, who some have suggested that is the John Bercow candidate, though she herself has denied that. And then you have Eleanor Lang, Chris Bryant, I think are other names that we keep hearing about. Mark, who do you think is the favourite here? And also, what are, the battle lines when it comes to the cases they're putting forward for what they are going to put forward if they were Speaker?
Well, I think Lindsay Hoyle seems to be almost everybody's favourite front runner, at least, at the moment. And he's in pole position for several reasons. One is that he's been the senior deputy speaker for a very long time. MPs have had a chance to see him in the chair. He chairs budget debates as chairman of Ways and Means, the senior deputy speaker. He makes rulings at committee stages on which amendments are called, for example. He's also been in charge of supervising MPs' security issues. And that's been actually much more important, although very low-key, almost unseen. That's been very important for individual MPs who've been dealing with him when they've had concerns about their security, the security of their staff, even the security of their family. So that's been an important part of it. His own case was that he was, for example, presiding in the chair when the terrorist attack against Westminster took place way back in 2016. And he's someone who has, therefore, you know, had a chance to show what he can do under pressure in very difficult situations. So that's the case that he's making, that people know he's a known quantity and people can trust him, and he will be a strong chair when the House needs it to be.
And on that, do you think that a candidate like Harriet Harman might see almost John Bercow's legacy almost stay more similar, in the sense that some say Harriet Harman is likely to be a partial speaker rather than an impartial? Do you think that's fair?
I think she would try very, very hard to be an impartial speaker, but all politicians who become Speaker of the House have been a member of a political party at some time before it, but very few of them have twice been its leader. And the hit against Harriet Harman is precisely that she's twice been leader of the Labour Party. And so that's a very big leap into the chair, and people point that out. And the other candidates who might have a shout, Eleanor Lang, I think, has shown a bit of form in this election, a little bit of possibly unexpected support from the SNP benches, partly on the basis of her own Scottish background. But she's, I think, emerged as the most likely of the Conservative contenders to put in a serious challenge. I'd also keep an eye out for Chris Bryant, who's a very assiduous parliamentarian who's been very involved in sort of Parliament administrative issues, restoration and renewal, various other aspects.
And he's always been running on an anti-Burko ticket, hasn't he? Or perhaps I'm jumping to conclusions here, but he did send an email around to MPs which appeared to suggest that he would be moving away from the Burka way of doing things.
I think that almost all the candidates have had to try and distance themselves and say that we're not going to be continuity Burko, we're not going to get into rows in the chair, we're not going to give sort of long 20-minute appeals for brevity in debates and that kind of stuff. So they're all trying to distance themselves in that sense. But I think that Chris Bryant is one of the modernisers in this race, the people who think that some of the more antiquated aspects of parliamentary procedure need to be improved, that the way the House does its business does need to be brought into at least the 20th century, if not the 21st. And so there's that wing of the contest. A name to watch out for, incidentally, is Meg Hillier. No one saw her coming for the job she's in at the moment as chair of the Public Accounts Committee, which is a very senior internal post within Parliament, but she organised highly effectively and may have a bit of cross-party reach. And to get the speakership, what you need is the ability not just to reach across your own party for support, but into other parties as well. She may have a bit of that.
And finally, Bobby, I'm just wondering, what do you think John Burko is going to do now? Because there have been some reports in recent months that he has a cult following over in America. Do you think that we are going to see John Burko go global?
I think he already has gone global. I mean, as his biographer, I get calls from newspapers from extraordinary places. So yesterday I was talking to a newspaper from Sweden, then it was one from Dubai and from Finland. So people across the world are fascinated by him. I mean, I didn't think that I would be quoted in the New York Times talking about John Burko. I mean, it's utterly bizarre to me, frankly. But people across the world do love him. And I think what he's successfully done is made himself this international superstar. And so I think he'll make an awful lot of money on the speaking circuit, particularly in the US. And I think he'll try and position himself for some kind of senior international job. I mean, I saw today that perhaps he's been priced out of doing I'm a Celebrity because he was asking for £1 million. I mean, I think that tells you he does want to earn a lot of money. I'd quite like to see him on I'm a Celebrity. And obviously his wife, Sally, did Big Brother. So they're kind of completing the set.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Bobby.